Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Progressive News Network. I'm your host, News Director Rick Spezak, along with my co-producer, Mickey Royce. We want to welcome you to another evening's adventure of Progressive News, where activists from across the state come and tell you the good news of what they're doing to make this a better world. We stand against all the forces of oppression. We stand against those who would tell us that a human being's vote does not count. We stand against those who have corporate agendas that see only one way to making this a better world, and that's by carving their profits out of living flesh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we call this our Search for Justice show. We're going to have a group of fine justice seekers with us tonight. We're going to have Steve Wallace. We're going to have Trent Steele. We're going to have Rick Ford. And we're going to have Barry Silver, all of whom are working to bring justice to this too often compromised world. We've got some other news we want to share with you tonight. Don't forget, August 15th, our good friends at Palm Beach Now are having an open membership meeting. That's August 15th at 6:30 p.m. at Compass Community Center. That's 201 North Dixie Highway in Lake Worth. If you didn't get that address, stick around. Make sure you get out your pencil and paper, and we'll do that again at the end of the show. That's the Palm Beach County chapter of Now. They're going to have an open membership meeting on the 15th of August. Make sure you're there. It's going to be 6:30 p.m. at the Compass Community Center, 201 North Dixie Highway in Lake Worth. Also, we want to mention that for those of you who are aware of the terrible things that were done in Wisconsin, you can help out, even though we're down here in sunny Florida. Check out a website, calloutthevote.com. That's CALLOUTTHEVOTE, calloutthevote, all one word, .com, and you can sign up to help make some phone calls to make sure that the progressive voice is heard. It's not just the corporate and cosh-powered voices heard in Wisconsin. A week cannot go by without some more shenanigans out of Tallahassee. You know, it seems that Governor Rick, he never saw a piece of change he couldn't pick up. Has tried to steal a page from a good Democratic governor and do some fake work programs, but our good friends at Pink Slip Rick showed up when he tried to fake his way through a pseudo-job appearance at a Dunkin' Donuts out in the West Coast. They showed up, too, and they pink-slipped the Rick. So that's a shout-out to our good friends in Pink Slip Rick. Keep up the good work, friends, and whenever he's out there trying to pretend he actually gives a hoot about the about the people who they say elected him, make sure that you let your friends at Pink Slip Rick know that you support it. Also, on another interesting news front, we have many, many, many progressives are still working with the Democratic Party, and one of the things that they have accomplished is the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida is now officially part of the Democratic Party. Let us hope that they actually notice, and let us hope that all those good Democratic progressives have their voices heard in the Florida Democratic Party. All too often in the past, these voices were not heard nor represented. So let's hope that that does really begin to turn around. I want to congratulate all those who've been involved in making sure that that Democratic Progressive Caucus has been recognized by the state of Florida Democratic Party. Bravo. Good for you. I do want to mention one other interesting bit of news. Standard & Poor's, I'm sure many of you have heard this, Standard & Poor's, who never noticed when all those manufactured pseudo cans of air were rated AAA, they came out of their shell to pretend that they noticed that America has some problems, and by gum, not without taking a shot or two at the the public, they said that, oh my gosh, you know, they are troubled. They're worried, friends. They're worried that, oh my God, you know, maybe America should do something different than have a stalemate and this Tea Party crisis, another one of those manufactured Tea Party crises, is going to, they say it needs to be fixed, not just with cuts, but instead, friends, they've noticed that you need some revenue too. Well, without any further ado, I noticed that our first guest has arrived. Let's check it out. I bet we have here Mr. Steve Wallace.
This is Attorney Steve Wallace. How are you?
Welcome, Mr. Wallace. Welcome. Welcome to Progressive News Network. How are you this evening?
I'm doing very well. I just noticed you were talking about the S&P debacle that came out conveniently right after the market closed.
Well, I think it's just fantastic. They finally noticed somebody.
Besides, yeah, I mean, all those packaged garbage mortgages that led us in the Great Recession, they turned their nose on that. But all of a sudden now they've woken up out of their slumber.
Well, it seems trying to find some lemonade in that lemon, they did notice that it's going to take some revenue, and I think for that we have to thank those good members of Standard & Poor's who maybe are going to do something more than notice the government. Mr. Walliser, welcome. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what brings you here in this search for justice night?
Sure. I'm an attorney. We have offices in Boynton Beach and Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We represent individuals and families and small businesses in the protection and search for economic justice. I represent a lot of folks that are feeling the adverse effects still from the last credit debacle. I represent a lot of folks that are struggling to stay in their houses despite all the bank fraud that's been going on. I also protect folks that were taken advantage of by the credit card companies. How we seek activism, we are true champions and protectors and seeking due process in this horrible financial mess that a lot of folks have gotten into. I'm pretty involved in partisan party politics. I've just finished a two-year reign as the president of the Democratic Club of Boca Raton and Delray Beach. I also work very hard in, getting voter turnout in minority areas. During the 2008 election, I was on President Obama's legal team, and we had a bunch of situations during the election. My wife also was working at that time, and she actually called CNN to notify them that one of the polls in West Boynton Beach never opened, and they finally opened it 2 hours late.
I'm shocked to think that there may have been some political shenanigans going on. Mr. Wallace, you've given us so many wonderful, interesting areas to discuss. Let me ask you one of those questions that's close to my heart. I noticed
sure.
that a couple of the state investigators who were looking into mortgage fraud and who really made some serious inroads in that direction were, summarily terminated. Have you heard much about that? Do you know anything about that?
It actually is even worse than we initially expected. It went further investigation showed that one of the higher senior assistant state attorney generals conveniently left a few months ago to go work for Lender Business Processes, which
mm-hmm.
is one of the companies that's under investigation by the AG.
What a coincidence!
I know it's quite ironic. The two attorney generals that were dismissed, I mean, they did some great work. They were the ones that uncovered the robo-signers and led to the demise of one of my rivals, the law office of David Stern, who we battled with almost every day in the courts in Palm Beach and Broward.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I'm sure you also mentioned the other, terrible, terrible arena of consumer abuse, the credit card interest rate debacle. I'm sure that you're, like us, concerned about Ms. Elizabeth Warren's departure. Do you hold hope that there will be some teeth and some desire in the agency to actually do something, or is this going to be another watch this hand sort of operation? What's your take on that?
I mean, I have to tell you that some of the president's selections in the Treasury and some of his some of his financial advisors have been pretty disappointing. I'm pretty familiar with Professor Warren. When I was in law school, I was on the Syracuse University Law Review, and I wrote my law review note on the bankruptcy reforms. And Professor Warren had a great mind. I mean, she obviously came from academia, but she had a very good balance between the business sector and the consumer protection. I'm very concerned about who will be taking her place on the economic advisors.
You know, and I follow that story very closely because I'm a real solid supporter. To hear someone say, as she did so many times, there's only one reason for all that fine print, and it's not to make room for an important piece of truth in those contracts. But besides that, I know the story has been, and the way it's been promoted is that, well, that's okay that we've lost Ms. Warren, Professor Warren, because her right-hand man, Mr. Caudray from Ohio, is the person who's going to be taking her seat. But from a little further in-depth research, we see that there's a White House person who's going to be holding temporarily until he gets full reins, and he is right out of big business and big banking. His name escapes me right now.
It's scary. Well, the biggest joke on Wall Street is Treasury is a revolving door for Goldman Sachs. I mean, Treasury doesn't necessarily protect the American people. They protect Goldman Sachs.
Yes, and it sounds like the same sort of infection took place in the AG's office here in Florida. Is there no constraint on that revolving door where these lenders, business people can jump from state oversight right into the lap of one of these mortgage broking companies?
Well, my main concern is in certain areas, like, for example, if you're on the federal level, there is a little more oversight, but in Florida, there is a revolving door. I mean, I think at the very least, if someone works for one of the agencies or works in the legislature, they should have at least 1 year bar from lobbying. But the minute they step out of the public sector, they can go right into the private sector. And I see it so much because my wife used to work for the state, and, you know, so many folks would just, you know, one day they'd resign on Friday, then on Monday they'd be working, you know, in the private sector, utilizing all their connections to, basically take advantage and manipulate the system.
You know, not to belabor the obvious, but it seems to me that when we have lawyers who are on Thursday regulating and on Friday defeating regulators, isn't there some – I know this is, you know, talking about principles kind of funny, but, you know, every lawyer takes an oath to support justice, to be even-handed, to avoid, the improprieties. It seems that these people are totally bereft of any sense of responsibility for their actions. And I realize the dollar speaks loudly, but my goodness, you know, these are officers of the court first, or at least are supposed to be.
Well, I mean, it's certainly at the very least, even though there's no legislation that prohibits it or any regulations, I mean, it certainly doesn't pass the smell test. And, you know, oftentimes as attorneys, we get bogged down into the fine print, but also we have to, you know, look at the 10,000-foot view. And if even though there may not be a particular legislation there, ethically, it just doesn't pass muster.
Well, then there's another area, Mr. Wallace, that you brought up that I think is fraught with potential for wrongdoing, I'm afraid. The Republican our legislature has recently tampered tremendously with the voting regulations. How do you see that process right now, and where do you see us facing both this redistricting process as well as all these new restrictions? Of course, Tallahassee's tried to dodge the feds by going to a circuit court. Do you think they're going to buy anything with that?
Well, I mean, here's the concern we have is that a lot of the you know, it'll start on the circuit court, but then it'll eventually go up to the Florida Supreme Court, and unfortunately, the Florida Supreme Court is stacked with conservative political appointees by Governor Crist and our current governor. You know, a main concern, when I was the president of the Democratic Club of Dar Beach in Boca Raton, we worked very hard to get those petitions signed, to get that redistricting on the ballot, and then ultimately, you know, we worked hard to get our folks out to turn out to, you know, pass that amendment. It's really the regulations that have been put forth, the harsh restrictions on voter registration is just a pure partisan shot to limit the folks that we turn out in the 2012 election. I am always concerned, and elections have their consequences. When we have that, when we have Skeletor up there in Tallahassee right now, I'm really concerned, you know, what a ruling, how a ruling would come back from the Florida Supreme Court. And, you know, I'm not that optimistic it going through the court systems, because ultimately the high court does have political appointees.
Well, luckily, at least symbolically, that court will have to answer to a higher federal court. Of course, ultimately, we've got a Supreme Court that's got an interesting selection of appointees as well. Mr. Wallace, if you could sum up in few sentences what you think the most important message you have for our audience, what would you say, sir?
Well, I think it's very important not to lose faith in the system. You know, our founding fathers put forth the judicial system, and, you know, obviously, you know, I'll give you a prime example with the Kaylee Anthony ruling. A lot of folks are worried about the sanctity of the system. You know, unfortunately, a lot of my colleagues give attorneys a bad name, but what I can tell you, there are good attorneys out there, like all the folks on that are guests on this show tonight, and there are really good attorneys that work very hard, and I, you know, my hat's off to a lot of the attorneys that sacrifice their financial well-being and work for the government. And, you know, it pains my heart to see those two great attorneys at the Attorney General's office get dismissed because they were too successful in their investigations. But what I can tell you is, you know, I maintain that everybody should have faith in the system, because in the end, you know, justice will be served.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
And I appreciate it so much. And keep
okay.
up the great work. I've heard so many good things you guys are doing.
Well, thank you very much, sir. And we look forward to having you back again, okay?
I look forward to it. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Leesman, that was Mr. Steve Wallace, an attorney, who, as you can see, worked a wide range of areas of consumer law. And now I think we've got Mr. Trent Steele, who is with the – he's a board member of the Human Rights Council. Hold on one second. Mr. Steele, welcome.
Hey. Well,
how are you this evening,
you.
Sir?
I'm good.
He was just asking me.
That's
about
good.
Politics.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, sir, and we will we look forward to hearing something about the Human Rights Council.
Sure. I'm an attorney. I'm a board member on the Palm Beach County Human Rights Council. I've been a member for probably 10 years or more. The Palm Beach County Human Rights Council, which is not to be confused with the Human Rights Coalition, or HRC, which is a national organization, is a local Palm Beach County organization that was started many, many years ago to basically educate and advocate on the part of the county's GLBT population in Palm Beach County. It's comprised of a diverse board of both straight and gay and lesbian and transgender board members. And basically the goal is to educate the various county and municipal organizations within the county about GLBT issues, both at the Palm Beach County Commission level, the court system, the school system, and the advances, I think, that the organization has made under the leadership of Rand Hock, who is the chair and founder of the organization, have been pretty extraordinary, both at a state level and at a national level.
Now, that's fantastic. Human rights is so important. And, you know, those of us on the progressive side of the fence, we have so many battles. It's too easy sometimes for battles that we thought we won some time ago to see gains that we've made slip away. Why don't you tell us about some of the current activity of the Human Rights Council?
Well, you know, what's really been extraordinary is that we were founded in 1988, and we've continued to really make pretty amazing advances. Literally, have been at the forefront of GLBT issues. But currently, I would say that what we're working on is to work on Florida Atlantic University, which, we've been trying to get them to adopt some policies prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression, and to provide employment benefits to families based upon domestic partnerships. At the same level that are provided to families based upon legally recognized marriages. We've been working with the Village of Wellington to provide employment benefits to domestic partners. And we've been working at the court system to deal with issues, diversity training for judges and other court personnel dealing with GLBT issues. And I've personally been working with the town of Palm Beach to get them to get in line with basically the rest of the county to offer employment benefits to domestic partners at the same level that are provided to other legally recognized married couples within the town of Palm Beach that are employees there. So those are primarily the issues we're currently working on.
When a gay couple has the unfortunate challenge of dealing with a hospital situation, how are our Palm Beach hospitals dealing with that? Are there issues about access? Are there issues about partner visits and stuff like that? Or is that pretty much not a problem of the past?
Well, I must say, on paper, Palm Beach County has some of the most progressive recognition of same-sex partners that exist in the country. The problem is, and literally we were at the forefront of this, the problem is that even if we have the laws existing on paper, there still have been problems. And there was a terrible, terrible case actually in Miami-Dade County just a few years ago, where a lesbian couple that was coming, that came here to get on a cruise to go out of Miami over to the Caribbean. One of the partners, they had all their paperwork in order. They had their durable power of attorney. They had their living will. They had their designation of health care surrogate. They had everything that should have protected them. And the county was set up in such a way that they should have recognized that the paperwork that they had in order, but for some reason or other, they went to a hospital in Miami, and the one partner had a massive heart attack, and the other partner, along with their I think they had three children that they had adopted. They refused to allow access to the partner, the other partner, because they said that Dade County had terrible laws recognizing married or lesbian couples from other jurisdictions, and they refused to let the partner and their children see the woman who was in the hospital until literally shortly before she died. And even then it was, it was very, very limited. So we've made a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go.
If I could,
County. Sure.
I, I didn't want to stop you there, but I was just going to ask in kind of a related question, when with the kind of the loosening of some of the marriage controls, at least in certain states, Florida is nowhere near that kind of open-mindedness. But
not at
I was,
all.
Yeah, I was wondering when with some of I'm just going to speak simply and bluntly without trying to be overly politically correct, with some of the theologically oriented politicians trying to set rules where if a person has a religious value that precludes them, that gives them a discomfort to provide, say, birth control, they don't have to help that person. Is the same situation true for our gay, lesbian, transgender community? Are they facing the same kind of, should we say, theologically prescribed restrictions as well?
Sure, sure. I mean, the wonderful thing about, and that's the sort of interesting thing, is that in Palm Beach County, and I think it's primarily due to the efforts of Rand Hoch and, you know, with all, you know, modesty here, you know, the Palm Beach County Human Rights Council, but it's really been Rand Hoch who's the director. Palm Beach County is leaps and bounds ahead of the rest of the state in terms of the recognition of the rights of the GLBT population here. We have a long way to go, but at the state level, it's, you know, we're woefully behind other states. Although I must admit, I was really surprised that the governor just appointed an openly lesbian judge in Dade County, which shocked the heck out of me. I don't quite know where that came from or what that was all about, but anyway, you know, who knows where that came from, but yeah, I mean, I would say that the, you know, the religion, you know, and people who claim to have religious differences, you know, with the GLBT population on religious grounds continues to sort of be a problem, for us, you know, even though we have many, many, many laws in effect here in Palm Beach County to protect against discrimination, primarily, again, due to the efforts of the Palm Beach County Human Rights Council.
Well, I think you've undertaken a really important cause, and I think human rights is exactly the right way to think of it. You know, life is so complicated, and when we can make a good common cause or when love blooms, I just don't see how there's any overriding principle that says that, and this is wrong, and I think it's so wonderful that you're in this fight to make sure that human beings do have their human rights, and I can't thank you enough. What else do we need to know today about the work of the Human Rights Council, sir?
Well, you know, I would encourage people to visit the website. It's pbchrc.org. To learn about the work that we do and to support us in any way that they can. I think that, like I said, you know, we've accomplished a lot, but we still have some, I don't know whether you want to call it areas of resistance or work to do. But, you know, Florida Atlantic University has been one of the kind of sticking points for us. The town of Palm Beach has been a sticking point for us. So many other municipalities and organizations within the county have been so receptive to the work that we do and have been willing to change their policies. But I would say that if you, you know, are an employee of the town of Palm Beach, or you are, you know, a student or an employee of Florida Atlantic University, visit the website, contact us, and you know, let us know that you care, and let the town of Palm Beach know, and let Florida Atlantic University know, and the staff there that you know, and, you know, that you care. And I think it would help to go a long way. But I would say that on so many other levels, we've made so much progress. And obviously, any financial support that anybody would like to, you know, to to help us with. It's always very important. You know, part of what we do is we endorse candidates, you know, within Palm Beach County that are running for office, and join our organization. You know, hit like on the Facebook page, it helps.
Well, thank you so very much, sir. Go ahead, give us that email, the web address, one more time, if you would.
Yeah, it's pbchrc.org. So it stands for Palm Beach County Human Rights Coalition.org.
Well, thank you so much, sir. We certainly appreciate you joining us. You have a good evening.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And now we've got our next guest, Mr. Ford. Hold on one second. I'd like to welcome Mr. Rick Ford, the founder of Floridians for Healthcare. Welcome, Mr. Ford.
Hi, Richard. Pleased to be here. And I want to just correct you. I'm not the founder of Floridians for Healthcare. I'm just simply the current president.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, sir, for clearing that up. I'll make a note there. Thank you, sir. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself and about the Floridians for Healthcare?
All right. Well, I am an attorney here in Florida and have been for over 20 years here in Florida. I'm practicing primarily plaintiff's employment discrimination law and was a candidate for state representative in District 83 in 2006 and 2008. But my work in this area as president of Floridians for Healthcare, which is a Palm Beach County-based statewide healthcare advocacy organization, which is dedicated to promoting a single-payer Medicare-for-all health system.
Excellent.
And the organization was originally formed back in the mid-1990s to save St. Mary's Hospital. And now our efforts have evolved into education and advocacy for single payer, and putting forth the message to people for a Medicare for all system.
Sir, before you go any further, and I do want you to explain that a little bit more, why don't you give our audience your web address so they can sign up, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of enthusiastic supporters of your organization.
Well, right now, as an organization, we don't have a current website, but I do have an email address that people can contact us. We do send out alerts and notifications on what's happening with the single-payer issue and Medicare-for-all issue. And people can send us an email, and we can put them on our email list. The email is Floridians, plural, FloridiansHealth@AOL.com.
@AOL.com. Okay, we'll give that again before the end of the show. Okay, great. This is really wonderful. So tell us, how did this evolve? I guess you saw the need. I'll just tell you one really quick little story. I was traveling and met some people from Canada who expressed just amazement. They said, you know, Americans, everyone we've met has been so nice. They said, we don't understand where this poisonous attitude has come from. Why is it that healthcare is seen so negatively? They said, what if, you know, a young family loses its job, they've got a child who's sick, what are they supposed to do? And unfortunately, with a very, very sober look on my face, I said, well, hopefully die somewhere out of range so that people don't have to step over them. But clearly, that's about the best thing we got going for them. You can get a little palliative care. You can get, you know, I mean, obviously our hospitals, the emergency rooms are available for short-term care. But unfortunately, our nation has not seen the wisdom of providing actual care. Sir, make that case.
Okay. Well, the problem with our system is that it is based on a for-profit private insurance financing system. And it's not that our doctors aren't some of the best in the world. It's not that we don't have the best hospitals or the best care. That is one aspect of health care. The other aspect is the access to health care, which is determined by how it's financed, how you can pay for the health care. And what has happened over the years is that the private insurance industry has taken over the entire financing of the healthcare system. There are now 1,500 different health insurance companies in this country that people have to go to. And they, of course, are a profit-driven industry. So the company, every insurance company is there to maximize the profits for its shareholders. And the way to maximize profit is not to have to pay out claims. And you don't pay out claims by putting pre-existing conditions, other restrictions, and simply denying claims. And in order to do that, they have created this huge administrative system that if you go into your doctor's office, for example, your doctor has maybe four or five people in there who do nothing but process the claims to go to the insurance companies. The concept behind a single payer, a Medicare for all system, for example, Medicare now, there is essentially one payer. In other words, one agency that funnels all the money that gets paid to it. We pay into the Medicare system by taking a premium out of our paychecks throughout our working life, and when we turn 65, we can then obtain health care, and the doctor sends the bill to Medicare, and Medicare pays it. What Medicare for All is, the concept behind it is that we expand Medicare to include everybody in the country. And from birth to death, and it would create a system where, not a socialized system, and this is very important for people to understand and for people who support this to tell their conservative friends, this is not socialized medicine. Socialized medicine is where the government owns the hospitals and the doctors are employees of the government. The Veterans System, Veterans Affairs, Veterans Administration is a socialized medicine system. England has a socialized medicine system because the doctors are employees of the government. Under a Medicare for All system, it's like Medicare is now. Medicare, you go to any doctor you want. You're not restricted. And it is simply publicly financed, privately provided health care. So that the financing, instead of having 1,500 different insurance companies that funnel all the financing to it and have to get the financing through, you have one single agency. And what that does is that because one-third of all the dollars we spend on health care in this country is spent on administrative costs. That's the administrative, the overhead, the underwriting, CEO salaries. So one-third of every dollar, $400 billion a year, are spent simply to administer this far-flung, broken system. If we eliminate the insurance companies and have simply one single government agency for which our money is given into, all the money that goes in Medicare, the Medicaid money, all the other programs that we have, we put them in the Medicare Trust Fund, and people can pay a premium as they work, a little larger premium as they work, of maybe 2 or 3%. For example, my wife, for example, when she we were on her health care system, she paid 30% of her wages went to pay for her the health insurance that she had through her employer. I would rather she only pay 3 or 4% for that to Medicare, and she would be able to bring home the other 25% and spend it in the economy, which would then generate more economic activity. And this is a very, of course, complex subject. And I invite people to go to. I'll give you a couple of websites here that has a lot of information on this. And one of those is the Physicians for a National Health Program, and their website is pnhp.org. They have a wealth of information. It describes how this system would work and answers questions about that anyone would have with regard to this. And for those wishing to get active in addition to getting on our mailing list and letting us keep you up to date on what's happening, is healthcare-now.org. Monitor all the and promote all the activities going on around the country for this. We tried to get single payer discussed during the healthcare debate in 2009 and 2010, and they wouldn't even put it on the table. And people were arrested.
It was so unfortunate. I stood there at the Democratic convention and I heard the Democrats running for office proclaiming their support of single payer, and boy, they walked away from it so fast I couldn't believe my eyes.
It's because of course, insurance companies and the lobbyists in Washington have so much power and fund all these people. What's his name? Was head of the finance committee that considered this thing, Max Baucus from Montana. He got $4 million from the healthcare industry, okay, and health insurance industry. So, you know, he's not going to say, well, we're going to cut you guys out altogether. And so on a national level, this probably is not going to happen anytime soon. But what happened in Canada was they didn't start out with a national system. They started out province by province. One province did a single-payer system. Another province did it. And eventually all the provinces did it. And then they combined it into a national system. That's the same thing that's probably going to happen here, because the effort now has turned to a state-by-state thing. Vermont has just passed a single-payer system for the state of Vermont. California has one in the legislature now. In fact, they've passed it twice or three times already, and Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed it. But now they've got Governor Jerry Brown, who would more likely to sign it. They're going to pass one. And once the states start doing it and start saving money with it start being able to cover everybody with health care, the other states are going to start doing the same thing. And, in fact, here in Florida, there will be an effort in the next year to put before the legislature a single-payer bill for the state of Florida. And
really?
We will be letting people know about that. And there will be, of course, we don't expect under Governor Voldemort and the current legislature that anything will happen this year. But we want it on the table. We want it on discussed. We want to get hearings on it. We want to get things going on it so that in 2012 and in 2014, when we have redistricting and we get a more balanced legislature and elect a more progressive governor in 2014, that we can get something going here in the state of Florida. So we're encouraging everybody to stay tuned
You so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Ford. And I hope you will please let us know in the future when you've got some more information for us. Okay, thanks again for calling.
I certainly will. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, sir. And now we've got our next caller ready to go. We've got Mr. Barry Silver. Mr. Silver, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. I enjoy listening to Rick Ford. I've worked with him on the health issue. I've been out on the front lines with people getting themselves arrested and as an attorney helping them to defend themselves and try to push the issue and help organize these demonstrations. Rick Ford is doing an awesome job. He's a tremendous asset to the cause. He's very articulate, very impassioned, and very savvy about how the political system works. So it's great to have him working on this issue. The odds against passing something are very formidable, but he's not discouraged in the least, and we need someone like that, because many times it appears that something can't be done, but with somebody who's courageous and dynamic and knows how to persevere, those kind of things do get done. So I'm glad to be working with him and glad to have him on your show.
Well, Barry, let me ask you a question, if I may. You know, you mentioned it. He mentioned it in passing. How are people getting arrested when they're advocating for health care? How does that happen? Could you tell us the incident?
Oh, well, the plan was to get arrested. So they weren't just saying, we think we should have universal health care. They would go to a particular health insurance company and say that they wanted a particular individual who had some kind of life-threatening disease to be covered with health insurance because their policy should have required that to happen. And then they would demand to speak to the head of the company and get their assurance that they would provide coverage for this person who desperately needed it. And then inevitably they would not provide such coverage, and then they would camp out and block and just block the entrance until they got arrested. So it was designed to make a point. I mean, there was a one in a million chance that they might actually do the right thing, but it was intended. I've done quite a few demonstrations like that where the purpose was to get arrested, to make a demand which should have been reasonable, but we knew wouldn't be met. I've done a lot of work with demonstrators on all different issues, animal rights and women's rights and environmentalists and healthcare and Native American rights, so I'm pretty familiar with how those things go. And there's different types of demonstrations, and the goal is different on many occasions. Certain times, the goal is to get arrested.
We just had a guest on a few weeks back, Mr. Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, who's currently facing a year in prison for the terrible crime of feeding hungry people.
I was involved in a lawsuit against the city of West Palm Beach in which I was representing Food Not Bombs, and we felt that the ordinance that they passed was unconstitutional. Unfortunately, we prevailed, and that ordinance is now history.
They had
passed an ordinance in West Palm Beach saying that it was illegal to feed homeless people at a particular park, and that has now been defeated. So it is really amazing that people would pass such ordinances against feeding hungry people. I guess, like they say, only in America.
Yes, with our strengths and weaknesses, our theocrats and our true patriot activists. Sir, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about the Palm Beach Environmental Coalition. Barry, what do we need to know, sir?
Well, first of all, I formed the Environmental Coalition when I had the dubious distinction of being in the Florida legislature. By some miracle and fluke, I happened to have gotten elected to the legislature before a lot of the special interests were quite aware of what might result. They did fight hard against me when I was running, and I was heavily opposed by developers and polluters and reactionary types, but somehow I got in. Once I got in, then they made sure that it was one term. And I can say that with the Florida legislature the way it is, anyone who stays there more than one term without speaking out and denouncing the entire legislature has sold out. Nobody should ever be involved in that situation without speaking out. There's certain times when you need to speak out. And if you're in that legislature and you're not vociferously castigating what's going on, then there's something wrong. You're part of the system. When we got into the legislature, we were allowed to have someone give the invocation before the meeting. And my father is a rabbi. I also am a rabbi. My father's a rabbi, so I asked if he could come up and give the invocation. And someone said, "Rabbi, you're going to say a prayer for the legislature?" He said, "No. I've taken a look at the legislature, and I decided it would be more appropriate to say a prayer for the people of Florida instead."
Or maybe an exorcism.
And then he parked his car, and he wanted to run into a store to get something, and he asked someone if they could watch his car while he was running in. And the person said, "I'll have you know, sir, I happen to be a member of the Florida legislature, and you're asking me to watch your car." He says, "That's okay, I trust you anyway." So what was going on there is quite shocking. I can give you just a few examples so you kind of get the flavor of what was going on. When I first got up there right away, I was initiated into the collegial body by the Democratic Party, who gave me a list of lobbyists to call, explaining that the procedure is that you call the lobbyists and then find out what they're interested in looking for. Then you schedule some kind of meeting with them, which they pay for, and then they then you tell them that you'll, you know, do what they're asking you to do, and then they give money to you and the party. So when I explained that I wasn't interested in doing that, I prefer raising issues to raising money, and I offered my services to help the party in any way that didn't involve raising money, I was bitterly castigated, told that I was not a team player, and assured that I would never come back to the legislature again. And it's true that the Democratic Party worked very hard to keep me out. Another thing that they really found...
I wish I could say I was shocked, Barry.
Another thing that they found very repulsive is the fact that I refused to accept free meals from lobbyists. I thought that... I didn't think that would bother anybody. I was just doing my own thing. I just figured, you know, if other people want free meals, that's okay. But I would go to the lobbyists and say, that's okay, I'll pay myself for my own meal. I found out that that was a great offense to the other legislators in my party, because they felt that it kind of set a bad example and didn't look right. So they were rather perturbed about that. And I was told on numerous occasions that they would work hard to take me out because I was speaking the truth about the environment and about the critical issue of campaign finance reform. And so they had no use for me, and I guess I had no use for them either, but it was an enlightening experience to spend a little time in the legislature. It seemed to me like it was a den of iniquity that was going on up there.
Well, you know, this has been an absolutely incredibly insightful and you know, sadly amusing anecdote. Let me ask you this: although you recommended that people shouldn't stay long in the legislature, I noticed with some small amount of surprise that Mr. Haridopoulos, who said he was going to run for federal office, has turned his back on that opportunity and has. Seeing himself returning to the duties he has as a legislator, do you think there's anything related to the gear prosecution?
That could very well be. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm always amused when they call the legislature public service. It's really feeding at the public trough. It's not so much public service. The other thing that I think your listeners might find interesting is that it was explained to me when I got to the legislature by my colleague. What constitutes an honest politician? An honest politician is someone who takes money from lobbyists and then does their bidding and does what they want them to do. You see, it would be dishonest to take their money when you really didn't intend to do what they want. That would be giving a false impression. And if you did that, they could not count on you. Because if they give you money and you don't do what they're asking for, then you're unpredictable. And if you did that, then you threaten your opportunity to get money from anybody else, and you threaten the opportunity of your party to receive money. So being an honest politician is one that if he's paid for, comes through and votes the proper way and supports that cause. That's honesty in politics, as it was explained to me at the Florida legislature, which I expect is no different than other places. Regarding the environmental issues suffer the same fate as the other ones, except the environmental issues are much more critical, and they are permanent in nature. When you destroy the earth and you destroy the planet and you destroy the Everglades and you destroy water systems, these systems unfortunately don't recover. When you put a development on over a piece of land, then you can't undo that. It's gone forever. So we are facing critical problems right now. And the legislature is completely clueless about it because their special interest friends are receiving a lot of profit by destroying the planet. So the outlook for the environment is exceptionally bleak as far as what's going on in Tallahassee. The only chance is for people to come together as a grassroots movement and demand that certain things be done.
Well, I think the legislature has made it pretty clear that we can't afford clean water. And we certainly can't afford a healthy environment. I think that many of us would agree with you that their priorities are somewhat askew.
Well, not only that, but financially, what they're doing is destroying our tax base, and they are ruining our economy, and they are the reason. The conservatives are the reason why the economy is collapsing. Let me give you, for instance, if the sugar industry can reap huge profits and destroy the Everglades and then make the taxpayers pay to clean it up, that makes our taxes go up. When you destroy farmland, that means that we now have to get our food from other countries, which costs more and makes us beholden to them and affects our economy because now we have to purchase our food elsewhere. The way to have a good economy is to actually do something productive and to actually grow food instead of paving over your farmland and putting up a housing complex, which doesn't pay for itself. The infrastructure does not pay for itself. The developers make a handsome profit, and then they move on to their next place while we pick up the pieces. The right-wing conservatives who do everything they can to discourage family planning and tell poor people that they should not ever try to plan the size of their family, should not ever consider abortion, should not use contraception. They are the reason why our country and our economy is in such horrible shape. Because when you have millions of people who don't want more children, can't afford more children, aren't prepared for more children, and you force them or coerce them or make it impossible for them to avoid having more children because of your policies, then what you're doing is you're creating a situation where everybody else is paying millions of dollars to raise someone else's children. Now, I'm not saying that we should be concerned with women's rights because it's a financial benefit, but for every reason, including women's rights, including trying to stop the cycle of poverty, and including helping our economy, we should do everything we can to empower people to control the size of their families, because overpopulation is the number one environmental problem in the world today, and astoundingly, it's a problem that's never even mentioned by people in government because it's politically incorrect to say anything other than, oh, how wonderful it is to have 2, 12, 20 children. What a blessing it is. And nobody will tell the truth about it, especially the religious conservatives who use their religion in order to castigate women and their rights and to encourage people to just have more kids than they know what to do with. Because in their mind, they're going to go to heaven, and they don't really care what happens down here on this planet because this is just a temporary way station, while people living in reality are left to pick up the pieces.
Well, Barry, that's really useful and important information. Yeah, let me ask you this. If there's one final message you want to give people, and also please let our audience know how they can get in touch with the Palm Beach Environmental Coalition. I have to say absolutely thank you so much for your insight. Your stories have been marvelous, and we want to have you back again soon, okay? So how can they get in touch with the Palm Beach Environmental Coalition?
You can just give me a call, and I can get you information about it. I'm at 561-483-6900, and if you'd like to be put on a mailing list, you can just give me a call and I can get you on it. I would just say that the final word is that our country committed some of the worst acts known to humanity in a prolonged century-long genocide against Native Americans. And while that was going on, we were committing horrendous atrocities and taking people across the continent out and killing them and murdering them and taking their land from them and destroying their culture. While we were doing that, the politicians were silent. Even our greatest leaders, Jefferson and Washington and Lincoln, presided over this and said nothing about it until later on they said, oh, we made a mistake. And even today, we still don't acknowledge publicly what a horrendous crime it was. And now today, we also are making a horrendous mistake. We are destroying our planet. We are causing global warming. We are destroying what is left of the beauty of our planet for future generations. And just like before, everyone's going along. So I think that people need to wake up and say, just because everyone's going along and just because everybody's saying it's okay, it's not okay. Speak up and take action.
Thank you so much, Barry. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pleasure
being here. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that was Barry Silver with some really important insight into Florida state government and some of the pressing environmental issues facing us. I want to leave you with a couple final thoughts. Mr. Steele left us the information on the Human Rights Coalition, pbchrc.org. We also learned about the physicians. It's pnhp.org and healthcare-now.org. And you should get in touch with Rick Ford at FloridiansHealthcare@AOL.com. So thanks again for joining us. On behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, this is Richard Spezak saying tune in next week. Progressive News Network. Progressives are doing good work every day. It's a better world coming.
I'm a union man in the union force. The union world I'm fighting for. There's a better world coming.
Thanks and good night.